Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman. He's in the news for a couple of reasons. One is a lawsuit he filed this week to protect DACA from being abolished, violating the due process and equal protection rights of young adults brought here by their parents when they were children, like Teresa Lee, who we were just talking about. Another is some recent stories that say Schneiderman is Robert Mueller's secret weapon in the Russia investigation. Attorney General Schneiderman, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be back.
Can you tell us about your DACA lawsuit?
Sure. We filed a case. I filed a case along with 16 other attorneys general on Wednesday challenging the order to rescind DACA and the directive by the Department of Homeland Security to wind it down. We have claims based on the Equal Protection Clause of the Fifth Amendment. We have claims for violation of due process and violation of several different statutes, which really frame up what the federal government has to do when it wants to change such a major area of public policy, the Administrative Procedure Act and Regulatory Flexibility Act. But the heart of the case really is that the pretext offered to shut down this massively successful program and tremendously popular program really did not explain the actions taken, that what lies behind this is anti-Latino, specifically anti-Mexican animus. 93% of the DACA grantees are Latinos, 78% are Mexican, and there's an anti-immigrant and anti-Latino animus that really speaks more to the motivation to drive these 800,000 young people out of the country who are tremendously productive. By definition, you can't get into DACA if you have a criminal record. 97% of them work or are in school. They are really the cream of the crop. They are people who should be at the bottom of anyone's list for deportation. So we think the court will look at the reasons proffered and see that they're pretext and look at the real motivation and make a determination that this is not a program that should be shut down. And certainly they haven't followed the right procedures if they do want to shut down the program.
Let me follow up on that equal protection part of the suit, that ending DACA discriminates against Mexicans in particular. Why would it discriminate against Mexicans if it covers all immigrants brought here by their parents as children who are covered under DACA from any country?
Well, the courts have looked to the actual impact of government actions. And if you have a discriminatory animus and it has a disparate impact on a protected group, courts have held that that's enough. So, for example, in the cases that the very similar coalition of state attorneys general brought against Trump's anti-Muslim travel bans, the fact that they banned some people from countries who would not be Muslim didn't change the fact that they were targeted at Muslims, because the countries targeted were overwhelmingly Muslim. Sure, it would affect some Christians and people of other religions, but that doesn't matter. The fact that it's not 100% Mexican doesn't prevent a court from defining a discriminatory animus. And look, the president from day one on the campaign trail has been trash-talking about Mexicans, Latinos generally, Mexicans in particular. He just pardoned Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who had made a career out of profiling Latinos in federal courts that found repeatedly that he had done so. So we think the evidence is pretty strong on that front. But you don't have to have a 100% target to be guilty of discriminatory animus. That's pretty clear under the case law.
And I see you also claim, as New York State Attorney General, that ending DACA harms the state's residents, institutions, and economy. Obviously, it hurts residents who are protected by DACA. That's an estimated 42,000 New Yorkers. Are you saying it hurts other New Yorkers, too?
Absolutely. And we've had very strong support from the business community here, because DACA grantees, with 42,000 in New York, 800,000 across the country. Again, these are the most productive members of society. They are teachers. They are working in tech companies. They are working in finance. And we have support from educational institutions, people in tech community, in the finance community. They are the great majority of DACA grantees live with a relative or someone else who is a U.S. citizen. They support families. There are New York City school teachers who are DACA recipients. And so it's estimated that they contribute $140 million a year in taxes to New York. So this would hurt our economy. This would hurt our businesses. This would hurt our academic institutions. This would hurt our state. These are people we rely on. This is a group of folks who should be at the bottom of anyone's list to deport. They are good, productive citizens. They earn more than folks who are not DACA grantees and contribute to society in every way. By definition, you can't become a DACA grantee if you have any kind of a criminal record. So by definition, they keep their nose clean. They're participating members of communities all over New York, and there are a lot of New Yorkers who work with them, who are in school with them, who are their students, who are their family members, who would also be harmed if this program was ended.
New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman with us. Some conservative state attorneys general, as you know, were going to file suit claiming that DACA was unconstitutional because President Obama never had the power to impose it in the first place. Only Congress could change the law on immigration policy, which DACA seems to them to go against. Trump staved off that suit by announcing an end to the program. Do you think DACA itself is constitutional under the separation of powers?
Well, it's interesting because while the conservative attorneys general challenged the DAPA program,
and the parents of DACA recipients,
and they challenged a program that was enacted in 2014 to expand DACA. They never filed a challenge to DACA itself. No court has ever found it's unconstitutional. They've avoided that confrontation. So we think that certainly no court has ever said that it's unconstitutional. We think that it's a legitimate exercise of power, and it's been in effect for 5 years. We see what the results are, which are overwhelmingly positive. And that's why it's massively popular, not just in places like New York. It's popular in a lot of more conservative parts of the country. I mean, there have been a lot of examples of heroic DACA recipients who've been rescuing people who are victims of Hurricane Harvey down in Texas. So we think that certainly the American people see this as a successful program. The DACA recipients and everyone who works with them, knows them, is related to them, is a strong, strong base of support. And as a matter of constitutional law, these kids came in, they came to the United States through no fault of their own. They were brought in when they were children, by definition. They haven't got criminal records, they're productive, they have to meet educational requirements to get into the program. These are people we want to have here. And for the federal government to go back on all of its promises to them just violates the fundamental fairness that is at the heart of the jurisprudence under the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. One issue of particular concern to my fellow attorneys general and to me is that there is currently no guarantee that the federal government is not going to go back on its repeated promises not to use the information submitted by DACA grantees, which tells the story of how they got to the country illegally, against them in immigration proceedings. There is no guarantee in anything issued by DHS or Attorney General Sessions in the last couple of days that says we're going to keep our promise to keep that information confidential. That's very important.
But about your lawsuit, if it's constitutional for a president to create DACA with the stroke of a pen, why wouldn't it be constitutional for a president to end it?
Well, the presidents have broad power in this area, but again, you cannot act with a discriminatory animus if it has a disparate impact on a protected group. This is well-established law, and there are rules and guidelines for how to set up a program and how to wind down a program. Now, they could have brought a challenge to how President Obama set up the program, but they declined to do that. They've never actually pulled that trigger. So 5 years later, we see out the results of the program. Millions of people have relied on it, DACA recipients, and the employers who also submitted information, provided information with the guarantee it would never be used against them. For the federal government to reverse all those promises and go back on them now, we think does violate the Constitution and violates the federal statutory scheme for how you change programs like this. It's just also fundamentally bad public policy. It would hurt New York. It would hurt New Yorkers. It would hurt people all over the country. It's not a step in the right direction. We're trying to revive the failed efforts to have comprehensive immigration reform in Congress. There's some new energy behind doing that, which I find very encouraging. But the most basic first step is we shouldn't break our promises to this group of some of the most successful immigrants we've had in this country. And we've got the empirical evidence to back up their success and their contributions to our society. Let's keep our promises to the DACA grantees.
New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman for another few minutes. On the Russia investigation, you know you've been mentioned in the press as a secret weapon now for Special Counsel Robert Mueller because Trump can pardon himself or his associates for federal crimes, but not if you charge them under New York state law. Are you working with Robert Mueller or he with you on anything Russia related?
Well, I understand the question. I know those investigations are on everyone's mind, but we don't comment on ongoing or potential investigations until they get to a much more mature stage. So I really haven't commented on that. It has been reported that we've been in communication. It's not something that we comment about. I would say, though, Ryan, that it's pretty unremarkable for federal prosecutors to communicate with state prosecutors if they're both looking at similar things, or just to make sure you know what each other are doing so you don't interfere with each other's investigations.
I read in the Daily News that you've hired prosecutors who worked with Preet Bharara, who Trump fired as U.S. Attorney for New York, and you've tasked these prosecutors with looking into Trump's business dealings. Is that accurate?
No, we have picked up people from various parts of the federal government. Actually, you know, unfortunately, there are a lot of very good people fleeing the federal government right now, but we've hired some of them from U.S. attorney's offices or people who've worked in Congress. They all have broad portfolios. There's no one who's been hired specifically to look at Trump's business dealings. That's just a mischaracterization.
But if Trump had illegal business dealings with Russian oligarchs and they took place in New York, or since the meeting with Russian operatives and Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort took place at Trump Tower last year, and Trump Tower is in New York, if a crime was committed there that violates New York state law, you could prosecute those things.
If illegal conduct takes place in New York, that certainly is something we have an interest in. But there's much more wild speculation about this than really is warranted. So we're trying to do our job and stick to the facts and you know, behave responsibly about this. I know there are a lot of people who are anxious about these issues, but on this subject, there's more fake news than real news out there.
You brought that fraud suit against Trump University for $40 million, and they settled for $25 million, pretty good, especially after Trump said he would never settle and tweeted all kinds of insulting things about you. What did you learn from prosecuting that case that the public should know that might be larger than just the facts about Trump University? Anything?
Well, yeah, and in retrospect, I really got a preview of the scorched earth style that he brought to the presidential election. He set up a website to attack me, sued me for $100 million, filed phony ethics complaints with the State Ethics Commission. I had to hire my own lawyer to defend me there. The full front page of his son-in-law's newspaper, The Observer, was me as the evil Malcolm McDowell character in A Clockwork Orange. So before there was Lying Ted and Little Marco, there was Clockwork Eric. So in retrospect, I got a preview of this approach. But we also saw that after a lot of chest pounding and bullying, you come down to the point where you have to get in front of a judge, he settled pretty quickly, and he settled for a lot of money. So I think it's important to understand that he plays an aggressive game, but if you step to him, like many bullies, he often will back down. And we've seen that already in cases that we've brought since he's been president. And Scott Pruitt, his EPA administrator, has been trying to dial back environmental regulations, tried to put a hold on the regulations protecting us from smog or ozone pollution. We sued him, and the next day they reversed course. So they are going to try to move very aggressively with their deregulatory agenda and obviously, we believe, anti-immigrant agenda. But the answer is not to back away. The answer is to step to them.
Last thing on this, and I know you got to go. Do you think Trump's tax returns will be needed by Mueller or anyone else to decide conclusively if any Russia-related crimes were committed?
I don't necessarily think so. But again, I just don't comment on ongoing or potential investigations. Sorry.
Okay.
I know it's on everyone's mind.
I get it. When do you expect your DACA lawsuit to be heard?
We are hoping to get in front of the judge within the next week and see what. How we're going to proceed. We are our case is a related case to a case that's been before a judge in the Eastern District of New York for a while, representing individual DACA recipients and an organizational plaintiff that has a lot of DACA grantees in its organization. So we'll see, but we plan to move quickly and see what relief we can get to protect these kids as quickly as possible. As I say, one of the things I'm most concerned about is the lack of any guarantee that information will not be used against them and their employers. So that's an issue that we intend to raise quickly.
New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman leading 16 states in a lawsuit against ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Thank you so much for joining us, as always.
Thank you, Brian.